It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. Today, the amazing, incomparable, incredibly insightful Justin Lokitz is joining us. He is a business design expert, the chair of the Design MBA at the California College of Art, and serial entrepreneur. I asked Justin to come on today to talk about maybe it's the zeitgeist, Justin, of like where we're headed. I had this idea, you guys, that kind of occurred to me that I had written up a little article about, just to kind of, bounce it off some people. It's sort of the inverse of the innovation adoption curve, when that is the technology abandonment curve. We're sort of in this, what I'm calling late stage social media or something. And it feels like we're in a new place. And so Justin, I feel like, has the right body of kind of experience and expertise in business design, technology, sort of entrepreneurialism to kind of help us think through this and maybe project a little bit into the future. So this is kind of the futurist's future episode. Ooh. Maybe, Justin, I don't know.
I love it. Yeah, I'm a big time futurist sci-fi guy. Cyberpunk is my drug of choice, so here we are. Yeah, let's do it.
So Justin, just to familiarize folks who don't know who you are, you and I have known each other for a long time.
Yeah,
give us a little, just to give us kind of a table setting, like where you came from. I gave you a little bit of an intro, but I feel like,
sure,
justice, what do you do?
Yeah, so it's a good one. I've had a long, interesting career in San Francisco, Silicon Valley, sort of tech, and I cut my teeth doing just about anything you could do, from sales and sales engineering, and then I became a software engineer for a while. But most of the time I've spent in my professional working life doing, I'd say, two things, which is consulting and, mostly like business and product consulting and business model innovation as part of that, mm-hmm. and teaching in a corporate environment, which I continue to do, teaching in, in higher ed. So that's who I am. And from all of that, and I just mentioned that in the consulting thing, I'd say my expertise, I cut my teeth as a technologist. My expertise is in business design, business model innovation, stuff like that.
And you have kind of the business designer. You wrote or co-wrote the business designer's Bible, almost.
Right? Yeah, really. Yeah. Two books. Design a Better Business. That's how we met. It was in a workshop at General Assembly 10 years ago, truly 10 years ago now. And I was just launching, or maybe even pre-launch for that book, Design a Better Business. And that has become, in many respects, the business designer's Bible. And then also after that, and right as the pandemic was happening, co-wrote another book and published it called, Business Model Shifts. And it basically, like, how do you shift business models from one to the other? Yeah.
Which is exactly what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah.
So let's sort of anchor in this common technological framework called the innovation adoption lifecycle.
Yeah.
When you, that, like, I feel like it's been around forever. And it's something that I've always known, but that's not true, right? When did you first learn about the innovation adoption lifecycle, and have you used it in your businesses? Have you thought about it?
Yeah, it's a great one. I learned about it probably, I must have been about the time that it was maybe not, maybe after it was published, but right even before I went, I also went to the same school that I run now, the design MBA. So I went and got my MBA in 2012, and I want to say that I probably read that book. That's Crossing the Chasm. I want to say that I read that book 2010, something like that, so 15 years ago. And it was a bit of a, when I read it, it was a bit of a game changer. I was a product manager, a senior product manager at Autodesk. So I was running a product line and thinking through all the same things that are in that book, and like, how do we innovate, and what does it mean to be innovative? What does it mean to have early adoption of something, and then to, cross the chasm, as it were. And yeah, and so it meant something to me then. And then, as I sort of grew as a business person through that, and went and got my MBA, and then was doing a lot more consulting, it became a normal thing that I use. Mostly not, I wouldn't say as much for things that I'm launching, products that I'm launching, while it's in the back of my head, more as a framework to with clients to show them, hey, look, here's where we're at. Here's where you need to do this. How do you build strategy? You can't launch one product and think you're going to win forever. You have to have a portfolio so that you can do it over and over and over again. But yeah, anyways, that's how I've used it in my knowledge of it.
So I'll just, for folks that aren't as familiar with it, and we'll put some links in the show notes. The concept is that you're going to get people early on. There's a kind of person that will adopt your product before anybody else. And so you've got this kind of bell curve, it looks like. So at the beginning, you're going to have innovators, people who are like always looking for the next thing. And then you have early adopters who find use for it, but are, kind of still on the leading edge. And then early majority, and that gets you to the peak of the bell curve, late majority and laggards.
Right.
And so when you think of, I think one of the, in a technology, we could be talking about an app, or we could be talking about a, some physical type of innovation. I think EVs, electric vehicles, are kind of
Yeah, it's a great one.
exactly where we are. So we just got our first EV last year, although I'm tend to be an early adopter with tech, but with that was like more, there was a, it took a little bit more because there was some infrastructure. You had to get a charger. I wasn't so sure, right? So probably, I don't know, we're kind of cresting from early adopters to early majority maybe in the country.
I think so. And in fact, the fact that we're even arguing about it, and the fact that, pulling subsidies away or whatever, we don't need to turn this into a political show, it won't really matter at this point, is because we're in the early majority. But I think we're still, in that case, in the very early majority.
First half of early majority.
Yeah. But it's certainly crossed the chasm. We know what these things are, right? Part of that is, or the early adopters, and certainly the innovators at the very, very earliest, like, they're pretty forgiving.
Yeah, they're willing
Now
to put up with imperfections,
they're
right?
willing to put up with imperfections and bullshit. And now here we are, and we're not as willing, and to put up with imperfections in the system and the technology or anything else. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so I'll push, we're gonna push the conversation forward, and I'm gonna kind of pull up on my end. I'm just sort of looking for a kind of a chart or something that talks about time to reach 100 million users. And this is like the speed at which
Yeah.
a product will be adopted.
Yeah.
And so we've got this. I'm looking at one, and again, I'll put this up, but I've got one here that talks about it took 78 months for Google Translate to reach 100 million users, 70 months for Uber, 61 months for Telegram, 55 for Spotify, 41 for Pinterest, 30 months, so just over 2 years for Instagram, less than a year, 9 months for TikTok.
Yep.
Want to guess the last one is ChatGPT. How long did it take for ChatGPT to reach 100 million users?
I think it was something like 3 months, right?
2 months from
Yeah,
the.
2 months. Yeah, nothing. Yeah, nothing.
So now we're at this, I mean, all to kind of highlight the speed at which adoption is occurring, right? So now we're going through this and cycle much, much faster, at least for these kind of big apps. My feeling now is because things are speeding up to such a speed, and we also see the kind of the results of mass adoption. It's not like, oh, I'm predicting that when this happens, something. It's like we're seeing from launch to adoption to use to effect much more quickly. And that's where my thought around this concept of, because I think because we are able to see the negative effects and feel it now, that we're moving into this, and this is where it sparked the technology abandonment curve, which is sort of the inverse of what we're talking about.
I think that's certainly true. I think, and put this in, I think first of all, this technology adoption life cycle and these curves are also contextual. So an app is not an EV, right? These are far away from each other, and the time for there to be 100 million EV drivers is going to be way different than a
Course, you're
simple
talking about
app.
atoms,
And
not bits.
yeah, exactly. Atoms and not bits. And they are changing, this, especially, well, both of these, but definitely this app, and the speed we're going, it's paradigm changing, right? We are totally shifting, and these are global phenomena. And by the way, I think ChatGPT, let's just call it ChatGPT, and the app that we all know, I'm not even sure it's early majority yet. I think it's close to early majority, but I still think it's probably the sliver, right? Even with several hundred million people. But where you're going with that is, and I'll finish here, is the who's feeling the effects of it is Google is feeling the effects, right? And so where ChatGPT is keeps going up, and we're using that, well, when I say we all are more often going to this one app to ask it questions that we used to say, hey, just go Google it. Now I think when we say go Google it, it doesn't mean go Google it. I think it's now the verb is, I'll go ChatGPT it. And even if I say Google it, I'll probably go to ChatGPT first. So yeah, there's an offboarding, I think, in many respects of Google and other search engines.
So what are the reasons that let's kind of just bat this back and forth. What are the reasons that you will stop using a technology? Let's just kind of call that out, right? So you just said no, right? Like, so it's like a substitution or something.
A substitution, I think, if you think about value and value proposition, so now I'm going to get meta about it, but not the company meta, but I'll get meta about it. And if you think about value and value propositions, a good value proposition addresses my jobs to be done, the things that I need to do, my social, functional, emotional things I need to get done. It addresses some pain, right? Something I need to get over. The thing that a really good value proposition does is not just those things. It addresses ambitions that I have, gains that I have, something that I may not even be able to tell you what it is because it's hidden in my psyche, my brain. But when I see it, I know it, and it is nothing else I can do about it because there's an ambition to do more. It's a dream or something like that. And so I think, that's one of the reasons why we switch is that, it's not just social pressures, social norms, but we all of a sudden use something, try something, or shown something, and we're like, oh my God, that's it. Like, I'll just use this. And then it provides value, and there's this value, and we're like, oh, I'll never go back. Why would I go back? That's the thing now because it's provided value. I'll give you one quick example. I use this one in class all the time, and now I'll probably use the ChatGPT one. When the iPhone came out, right? So this is whatever, this is 2011. The iPhone comes out, or earlier, right? Was it earlier? I don't remember. We'll call it 2011. So iPhone comes out, and before the iPhone comes out, we ha all had smartphones. So everything in the iPhone, every single thing in the iPhone was something we'd already been using for nearly a decade. Here I am as a tech guy. I had Blackberries, I had Palm Treos, I had an HP Zorus way back in the day. I had all the things, and I was using the keyboards were better, that they had cameras, they had little apps, right? Not a lot of storage. You could put music on them, not a lot, right? MP3s came out. The iPhone comes out and it changes everything, and it does nothing different than what you had before, but it makes you look better. It's cooler. It has a new way to describe things. It has a new way to have your life on a screen, and not, focus on just sending text messages or whatever BlackBerry was, was good at. It changed the whole game. And it was ambitions, right? It was people's ambitions to look cool, to feel like this is the new way of life, whatever it is. I can't even describe it except to say that changed everything, right? And it's the same thing we're seeing now with some of these apps.
Right. Okay. And then there is this sort of bemoaning amongst the sort of social media founding crowd or entrepreneurs where it's like the goal is to get everybody on your app, but it will move, right? So there's sort of the network effect, right? So you've got you're gonna have Friendster, and then you're gonna have whatever the next thing, and then you're gonna Facebook, and then right. And so Instagram was gaining that, and then Facebook adopt, basically they bought Instagram because they saw that that was that's the competitor, right? And that's the lawsuit that they're currently in anyway. So there's this like next, always better. And because of the speed we've got these new that apps and technology can be developed at, we're going to have more and more of these, and they're getting really good at creating that kind of value. So TikTok comes in and basically is you're not going to delete Instagram, but you're spending less time on Instagram because you're spending it on TikTok, right? So that's okay. So that's one reason why we leave. The second, the another reason, I'm sure there's others, but another reason, and this is where my kind of hypothesis is not because it has failed to deliver value or there's even a replacement, but it's because I don't. I'm taking an ethical stance. I don't want to support a company that has these kind of like a negative outcome. A lot of data around Instagram's effect on the mind, the health of the mind of the young teen girl.
Totally.
We're seeing this, and this is that speed up. We're seeing the results of how these things, and they're. It's not just the speed, but the expanse at which they're taken over, right? Going that adoption curve. And my kind of early premise here is, and it's I'm just ref doing a little me search, and then I'm putting it out here to sort of figure out. But for me, as soon as Twitter got purchased by Musk, and I saw what they were doing, and I was a pretty avid Twitter user. I was like, I don't think this is going to go in the right direction. And I was talking to folks, and they're like, nah, it's fine. And like, I was talking to like another org that they were sort of advising on like how to promote your podcast or whatever. And they're like, yeah. And I was like, I don't know. Twitter's not so good. It's fine. But after a while, it really has degraded. And so I feel like I've gone from this, or at least for me, right? I left it pretty early. And can't there be like I'm thinking that there's got to be, or at least I want to expose this concept that the user has power beyond it's kind of the inverse of your aspiration that you're talking about.
That's right. That's right. The inverse of your aspiration is this has now turned into real pain for me. And it's my aspiration is not only not to be in pain, but to not support companies that pain me, that that pay, provide pain,
Yeah, that create the
that create
so
pain.
yeah, we talk about like a painkiller. It's like this is a pain, this thing is creating
That's
problems.
right. That's right.
So my model here is like that first like 2.5% are like boycotters is what I'm gonna call it, right? So I'm taking this instantly reject. So based on the founder, the values, whatever the ideology is, something happens, I am not gonna use it in the first place, or I'm leaving it. Then I've got early rejectors. And they're like they kind of believed in the what it, but it was like the trade by something, right? They knew ethical cost. Then early majority, late majority, right? So early majority was like, I thought this was going to be useful, but it's not. And I think X is an excellent example of that, right? Because now that's it's like the colloquial references to Nazi porn bar, right? It's like that's all it
Damn.
is, right? So it's
Yeah.
polluted by, and so you're getting early majority and even late majority, where it's like they really didn't want to leave, but it was just like indefensible to stay. And then finally, holdouts are going to be the ones who have to go if the business closes down. So that's my premise. I just want an
Yeah.
opportunity to get that out there. I
Yeah.
don't know. Is it all models are wrong? Some models are useful. Is this something that, where have I gone wrong? What could be improved? Help me kind of think through
Yeah.
the.
Well, I think first of all, I really like it and I agree with it, and you can see some of the effects of this now with both, both X, Twitter, and Tesla.
Tesla. Yeah.
Right? So you see the effects, and the effects are writ large in their revenue. And although Wall Street has not really had a big if it hasn't had a huge effect on Wall Street except a few couple big swings, otherwise it's fine. But yeah, you've seen that, and they've lost Tesla for sure, but also X lost huge market share in both cases. I One thing I'd say is, with again, I think it's all contextual too. So what we're talking about are these big companies that have, that are groundbreaking and, 100 million users, whatever, right? They when they feel the effects, they feel the effects of this stuff. And these are also public companies, and so you can, well, I guess X isn't anymore, but you can read about it, and it's all over the news. But this happens in, I think, probably smaller industries all the time too. Not, both curves happen in smaller industries or just less well known, or ones that aren't covered by media quite as much. But I like it. I think it totally makes sense. I think it totally makes sense. I think the challenge with the so sorry, what are we calling it again? The
Technology abandonment curve.
abandonment curve. I think the challenge with it when it comes to ethical things is ethics is also a challenge. Not only a lot challenging to be ethical, but it's broad. And so one person's ethics is not another person's ethics. While the ambitions are often pretty similar, ethics are not, right? That's at least the way I think of it, is the, it's ethics is a complex, complicated road to hoe. And
Yeah.
so abandoning something because of a person, because of an ideology, whatever it is, some people do, some people don't. And what we're seeing, for instance, with X is the people who don't then rally the troops, and then they get more of them, and then it's just amplification of a bunch of,
I'm totally talking about kind of
idiocy.
the kind of the division, the divisiveness.
Yeah.
People. So there were pre-X, there were, I'm going to launch my own social media site where they don't, where it's like, it's kind of more of a aggressive Republican point of view. Right?
Sure.
And so that was kind of the market. But then when you're, Musk and you have all this money, you can come in and actually buy the market leader and change it. I want to go back to Tesla for a second. It's a really compelling support for this concept because there are more alternatives, but
Yes.
you can't say, short of the freaking Cybertruck, you can't say that any alternatives are necessarily any better. They're
Nope.
pretty much all the same and
Yes.
probably not even as good, right? The UI and UX of
Right.
those are still so much better, but we have this, everybody's dumping their Teslas. And I would say, and this is where my experience as a brand strategist comes in, that they're doing it, the expression of your ethics, the expression of your values is driving this, because you're
That's right.
actually driving around. And this is the same, I would say it's the same function as people who wear the red MAGA cap, it is telling other people, right, and it's an expressive benefit, right? It's why people, it's why men shoes. It's why some glasses are so expensive. It's an expressive benefit, and so it's people are may not leave apps as quickly because I don't know if you're not on the app, you don't really see me on it. I don't have that re self-reflection. But with Teslas, everybody was just like, forget it. And there isn't, it is completely void of that first substitution, right? There are options,
That's right.
but they're no better.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And that's right. They're no better. They're not much worse, and probably no worse either. Yeah, that's right. I totally agree with that. And cars are also expensive things. They're expensive purchases that you own for a long time. So I think that would be another way to think about it. Maybe there's expressive benefits, and I know a few people who've ditched their Teslas, the ones they had, and they've had them for a while. In some regards, they were probably ready to move on to something, the next model anyways. They're like, oh, easy, too easy. I'm done with this. I'm not going back to that. But they're also such expensive beasts that you make this choice, and you're like, well, it's going to be a long-term choice. I'm not going with the long-term. This is not my long-term choice. I'm going to choose something else. And some people's long-term is 3 years. Mine, I buy cars and I run them into the ground. So yeah, that's why I also didn't buy a Tesla, because then I run cars into the ground. I'm not going to run that into the ground. I don't want it. I don't want that.
It's interesting because there are people who have held on to their car but want everybody to know they don't align
They got the bumper, they got the sticker on the back with the no Elon, or I bought this before we knew Elon was insane, or whatever it is. I see them all the time.
And so that's almost like if we think about we've already gone through boycotters and early rejectors, and so maybe you've got your early majority who is, I don't want to get rid of the car, but I do want you to know that I don't support this person. And it was pre, right? I bought before. So that to me is like the people that still have their car, but have the, have the sticker on it or whatever, blacking out the T, are early majority and or even late majority, maybe. We'll see how far it goes, right? But you've got and there's also they're not buying new cars, right? So you got boycott. No one's buying new cars in the first place. So I think it's an interesting case. And I think what I'm realizing is that you're going to have to, if we want, so the second part of my hypothesis is by illuminating or putting language to this idea of abandonment, giving people like calling out the fact that we have the power to actually affect how a business who that are dependent on us creating content, we can leave and have the ability to leave if we don't, even if it's creating value for us. And there's just a negative effect that we don't want to be a part of, and we don't and the what we will have to do is, for better or worse, tell everybody that we're leaving, because it's not, that's just not as interesting of a story. Like, how do we make sexy,
Yeah,
right?
that's interesting. And I'm not looking at this your curve. It's not in front of me, but it makes me think that, in the technology adoption life cycle, the rabid fans are at the beginning, right? And those rabid fans are the ones who are circulating the information. They're like, this is the best thing since sliced bread. I wonder if in the yeah, in your technology abandonment curve, if the holdouts, I wonder if the who's the loudest? Are they the boycotters, or are they the holdouts who've had it for a while? I don't know, right? I mean, I don't know, or maybe it doesn't matter. Certainly the boycotters are the really loud. Early rejectors too. Yeah, it's a great one. Yeah. I really like it. And I agree with it. Yeah.
So
It's yeah.
I started using Threads and right, so Meta's version of Twitter,
Sure.
and also I dipped my toe into Blue Sky, and
Sure.
I found, so Threads is a better experience. There's more people there, or at least I get more content there, but I do check in with Blue Sky. And we were just talking about a mutual friend of ours, who is a kind of a thought leader in the UX space. And I follow him. He was always like, he was early on Twitter. And
Yeah.
I just always follow him. He's a friend, and he's also really, really interesting posting. And I saw him post, and I've seen other people post on Threads, hey, I'm going to post here less. I'm actually transitioning to Blue Sky.
The blue sky. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
I'm announcing to the people that do know I'm here that I'm leaving. So
Yeah.
maybe
Yeah.
that's really the power, is I am demonstrating that I'll leave, because the absence of someone, I don't remember, like, I won't notice that someone hasn't posted.
Because there's so many other people there. Yeah. And the algorithm is going to change and show you something, similar anyways. Yeah.
You have to
Yeah.
somewhat, like, keep a
Yeah.
toe in. And
Yeah. That's a good one.
I don't know. It's kind of interesting. So in your let's go beyond the abandonment curve. So we've got speed, we've got mass adoption, we've got incredible speed of, technology evolving, whether there are EV credits or not, right? It's
Right.
like this kind of like energy space. It's like we're moving forward.
Right.
In your experience, like, from where you sit, how do you see technology and the kind of the appsosphere or whatever? Like, what are businesses like? What's kind of the next for these new businesses built on
Oh.
AI? Or like, what are some trends that you're looking for or you're seeing kind of emerge?
Yeah, I think, well, it's certainly AI is the trend right now. But I also don't think it's a trend in that it is just synonymous with ChatGPT becoming the most popular app and now also one of the most popular, edging up on, I think it just edged out Bing for search, and it's now edging up on Google. It's still far from Google search, but so AI is certainly the thing. I think the future is interesting in that, this AI thing is also now agent-based, or called agentic. And what that really means are autonomous systems that can make their own decisions, that can go look at data, that can also, be co-creative, certainly with humans, and check in, but can also turn the wheels and make things go on their own. And there's a couple things there that are going to happen with businesses. One is we have a chance to hire AI agents to help get things done, right? You see the early adopters of some of this are many of them are not haven't done a great job at marketing that they're doing that or doing it, for that matter, because, oh, AI, we're just going to adopt AI and it's going to fix everything and we're going to get rid of people or we're going to make them better or whatever. That's just not the right way to look at it. In this, one of my writing partners, Mario Ruiz, who writes in Design Shift with me, and we do interviews and so forth as well, right? If you look at another, there's another, another, framework called Jobs to Be Done framework. And if you look at the Jobs to Be Done framework, what you realize is for any big job, ambition, whatever it is for a company, you start to go down the list and you realize like there's so many tasks that go into that thing, making a piece of software or building a car, whatever the thing is. But that's where the companies are going to start looking next is, oh, it's not bringing AI in to take over everything. It's bringing AI in to augment humans who are already doing a bunch of work, but augment them in ways that we can take a bunch of stuff off their plates so that the humans become orchestrators. Now we still have humans, but they either get more work done or we have less humans that get more work done because now they're orchestrating AI agents in the background. The other thing that I think happens because of that is a design thing, and specifically like, physical and really digital design, I guess more than anything, is think of all these interfaces we have now, and the last paradigm we went through, the big one was, web to mobile, and now everything is mobile enabled, and it has to be mobile enabled. The next one is they're really, what is an interface? What's the point of an interface if it's all, if AI is contextual and changes with context, right? And shows us what we need to see, does things on our behalf behind the scenes, everything changes because what do we need a fixed modal UI for, design for? The AI will just change and show us what we need to see when we need to see it and how we need to see it on demand. And so this is what you're seeing with ChatGPT. The next versions are, well, the UI, I mean, if we're already all using Slack and email, that's the UI, right? For the work we're getting done. What do we need another tool for? The AI agents are doing the work for us in the background. We're responding to it just like we would any of our human coworkers, over Slack. It's responding just like a human coworker over Slack and doing its job as it would, as any other person might do that job, but it's AI, right? And so I think that's another big shift is design will fundamentally change and is fundamentally changing because we can't think of building really nice apps as anymore, maybe in business mostly, but we can't think of building these really beautiful apps anymore as much unless it's just a creative pursuit because information apps, it'll just be information anywhere. And how do you want to see that information? Is it in this app? Is it in this app? Is it this?
Yeah. Is there, I mean, much like we had talked 20 years ago about dematerialization of things, it's like a devisualization, right?
It's a
Integration or.
it's an integration. It's somehow an integration into the other things you already have. I think of it more as a window now, whereas the apps we use, Instagram, X, Blue Sky, all those, right? Those are great. And what they're great at is having a frame and a constraint, and then consistency with how it shows images or
Little task,
words or
right?
whatever. But those window dressing, that stuff that's sitting on top of the window, if you remove all that stuff, that the designs of the future are the windows. Behind the scenes is going to be a bunch of dancing monkeys or whatever that are showing us what we need to see it, how we need to see it, when we need to see it, and doing a ton of work to do that. But yeah, that's all the window dressing goes away and you just get the window.
So let me see if I can wrap up our conversation. The theme that I'm feeling is a we as humans need to, I think, take back our like proactivity or control or authority,
Authority. Yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yes.
Because if you don't, so much like if you just get on Instagram or TikTok, you're going to be there for hours without thinking about it. We need to put boundaries on, because we need to put boundaries on how we interact and behave. And we need to be conscious of how we are engaging with the world and with these apps, because now technology is so good, as you just pointed out, it just becomes a window. And so we need to have that authority. We need to make sure that we don't grant too much authority, or we're aware of how much authority we grant to anyone, right? So if you're just having agents running in the background, what are you allowing them to do, right? If you are giving permission to your apps to have access to all the, information on your phone, if you are giving, you're inherently, it's not even at this point, it's not even like yes, no, actively, I would like to give you per it's no, you're just using it and it's too good to stop.
It's too good to stop. Yes.
And so we need to, just like we need to learn how to have our own boundaries with work. We no longer just show up and at the desk at 9 and leave at 5 and then we're done, right? It can happen all around the clock, but we don't. I turn off my phone to learn, and I think we need to teach people how to take back that authority, and whether that authority is, I'm no longer using this app, I'm choosing to use something else, to be conscious and to actually access that. And you were talking about aspirations, but maybe there's sort of a set of higher order thinking and emotions and considerations that we need to tap into to say, hey, yes, my monkey brain will just flip through TikTok all night long, but I need to be actually having control over that because that's not what I want to be doing.
We need to take agency, right? And taking agency means we have a set of decision cr criteria, and they may be our own. We may be following others. We may adopt others' decision criteria for as our own. But that's right. Agency is adopting a set of decision criteria,
Not letting the decisions come like me made for you.
and not make letting decisions be made for you, right? And so it's the same, if you buy organic in the grocery store. Yeah, it may sound hoity-toity. I certainly do. I'm a vegetarian, so it kind of matters to me because I'm only eating vegetables. But, when I go to the grocery store, I do my best to buy organic, and that is a decision, right? I'm making that decision. It's often a little smaller, maybe it's a little more expensive, but it's decision criteria, and it flavors everything I do when I'm in that buying mode. Because now I look for everything as organic, and it's just one set of decisions I'm making.
Yeah, it's hard because then there's decision fatigue, but that's a whole nother print design
But
principle.
I think these criteria help with decision fatigue. So like the organic one is an easy one because you go in, okay, I don't need to look at everything. This is the thing. I'm buying that.
Well, I think we did it. We got to a very interesting
We
place.
did it.
That's really, really good. Justin, every time I have a conversation with you, I feel like we get to a really interesting, uncover a
Yep,
really
yeah,
interesting.
agreed.
If you want to hear and learn more about what's going on in Justin's head and the design world, design leadership world, check out designshift.me. It is a well, you describe it because I'll just
Yeah, it's a
what is it?
burgeoning newsletter, podcast, YouTube channel, all those things. It started out as with me interviewing people and then writing about it. And then I was like, well, I'm already interviewing them. I'll do what Josh does, and I'll interview him and record it, and then I'll put it a few places, and I'll write about it. So, but it's primarily a newsletter, and then it's got a
Who
podcast too.
should tune in to Design Shift?
Say again?
For whom? Who should turn
Oh, everyone should tune in, but certainly it's anyone who's design minded, creative. I think of it as designers, but these are people who are creative people and are interested to understand what's going on in the design world, the creative world, and how people are thinking about some of the things we just talked about.
Amazing. Well, Justin Lokitz, I appreciate you being here, business design expert, chair of the design MBA, and all around good guy.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on Great Mondays Radio. It was really nice to see you.
Likewise, Josh. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.